From Ameya Media, this is Karama Sutra, chronicles from communities we've grown up with. I'm Vinita Bhardwaj, and this episode is brought to you from my home, where just like hundreds of millions of people, we're practicing social distancing. To all our listeners, old and new, I hope you're all keeping well and staying safe. Now, for every episode we've produced so far, we have consciously worked to ensure that Karama, which means dignity in Arabic, is at the heart of each story. This episode brings that purpose to the forefront, unlike any other we've worked on so far. We start in India. A couple of months ago, we came across a piece called Kuvalapuram's Curious Guesthouse. Authored by journalist Kavita Muralidharan, the piece was devastating in its description of how menstruating women continue to be isolated in guesthouses in Kuvalapuram and four other villages of Madurai district in southern India. The segregation is unchallenged as residents submit to the will of the gods and the wider community. The guest house is a euphemism for a space reserved for women on their period, who are considered to be polluted by the community. It's referred to as a guest house in front of children and visitors unfamiliar with the practice. What compounds this tragedy even further is the fact that the guest house has no toilets for the women. Menstruating women stay for up to 5 days, while girls attaining puberty are left there for a whole month, and so are women with their newborns after giving birth. Culturally, this is not uncommon in India.
This is a kind of a wisdom that is passed. This is a kind of, you know, an unspeakable rule that you somehow tend to know. Girls are made to feel that they are outsiders. They are untouchable. And this has a very, detrimental effect on the self-confidence. And it trickles down to a girl's self-esteem, which is reflected in her studies, her overall personality.
That's Aditi Gupta. She and her husband, Tuhin Paul, co-founded Menstrupedia, described as a friendly guide to healthy periods. They brought out age-appropriate literature in the form of child-friendly comic books that have been translated into several languages. The resources also cover training materials for teachers, who are often saddled with the weight of pure biological terms and books to introduce girls to possibly the most important change in their lives. Aditi and Tuhin are based out of Ahmedabad in India. And as soon as we connected with them, we dispatched Chirag to meet them in their office.
Well, hello. I like the sound of that, dispatched. So Ahmedabad is a city in the western state of Gujarat in India with a population of about 8 million people. And now I went down to the Menstrupedia offices. It's quite a busy zone. You know, there's a lot of hustle bustle in the street and honking. I did remember wondering how insulated their offices were, considering all the street noise. They've got a nice little community space set up on the third floor of this building. You hear a little buzz of conversation, and you can see on all the screens different comic strips and social media posts being designed. I was actually given a pretty tight window of 60 minutes before Aditi and Tuhin's toddler woke up from his afternoon siesta in the conference room in the back.
Now, I have to say that I'm quite intrigued that a husband and wife teamed up to create a project called Menstrupedia. So you're going to have to tell us how it all started.
So it actually goes back to when they were in college together at the NID Institute in Ahmedabad.
I started seeing this pattern, you know, that every month there would be these few days where she would say that I'm not feeling like working today. So can you just complete that work without me? And so I would, like, being a boyfriend, and I would be genuinely concerned. Like, what is it? Can I help it? Or, you know, so then she would be like, okay, this is, you know, I'm on my periods. It surprises me now that 25-year-old me did not realize that this would be the most obvious reason, you know, because we are just two brothers at my home, and we live in a nuclear family. My mother never let me or my brother get ever a hint that once in a month she goes through this, and because of that she might be not feeling well. She would, like, take care of all the household duties without complaining ever. And the only time that I came across menstruation, like, not even periods, menstruation, is in the biology book, right? And so I just know that, okay, there's some bleeding happens, and, it's not that important of a topic for exams.
Now, this is somewhat symptomatic of the education curriculum in a lot of countries, including India, and definitely what we studied under the central Indian systems in the UAE as well. You know, we just had a couple of paragraphs in textbook in the 8th and 9th grade. And I still remember our biology teacher generally a very active participant in the classroom, not even lift his eyes of the paper as he just read them out verbatim and then moved on to the next chapter.
The textbooks have done a really good job at continuing making boys stay away and be disinterested from this topic. Yeah. So they completely succeeded in my case. So then I kind of refreshed my knowledge about menstruation and biology book, and I'm like, oh, okay, bleeding. Okay, how much does it bleed? And she said that it bleeds a lot, and it's supposed to be a healthy process, right? So, like, isn't that an irony? Like, as a, I mean, you would agree that as a guy, you would think that healthy means you should not be feeling any discomfort, right? So this completely came as a shock.
I mean, it's not entirely unsurprising that in a country like India, for example, boys are not introduced or educated or talked to about menstruation. But I think what is shocking from the sounds of it is that it's no better for girls either.
That's right. And in fact, realizing that she didn't know this is what made Aditi look at period education and awareness very closely.
At least Tuhin knew this word called menstruation. I did not know that periods are called menstruation. Actually, we had a lot of other terms to call periods so that we can hide it. And this is how I grew up. What I am today and what I've become has to do a lot with how much my parents cared about me and specifically how much educated they were and felt the need of educating me in the right way. But when it came to access of sanitary napkin, we did not have access. Not because we couldn't afford it. We were a well-to-do family. We could have totally afforded. But the sanitary napkin, that the one shop that would sell sanitary napkin was this medical store. And the medical store, in all the storefront, would be a guy. And if you live in a small town, if you're from a small town, you would know that everybody knows everybody. So everybody is your uncle, auntie, cha-cha, whatever. And then the question is, who would go buy menstruation, you know, these menstrual pads? So we used to use rags. Now, again, usage of cloth is not a problem. The problem is how we see menstruation and how we see the cloth which is soaked in menstrual blood every month. So we would wash it and reuse it again. But to store it, we would hide it in a dark place so that nobody knows that we are menstruating. And let me tell you that my father and my brothers were very close to me and very supportive. But somehow, you know, nobody told me what menstruation is, why do we get periods, what happens inside the body. But somehow, while growing up, I just knew that we don't have to talk about it. Like, good girls don't talk about periods. Those girls who talk about periods are the bad girls. These are also the girls who talk about bra, who started wearing bra early, you know. Even drying up, like we would hide it and dry it. I used to get a lot of infection by using these cloth pads. And this is not just my story. This is a story of, you know, millions of girls in India. Only about, you know, many studies claim that it is only 12% of the girls who are using sanitary napkin. Many studies claim that it is only 50% of the women using sanitary napkins and other unhygienic product. So and this was some, you know, like when I was growing up, when I was 12, things have not changed much. At least for me, I did not have to stop my education. But having a period means that 23 million girls have to stop their education. After that, they don't go to the schools just because of this natural biological process.
So the impurity aspect is a recurring theme which is brought up to validate the archaic traditions of isolating women. These can range from places of worship denying entry to women on their period to families restricting the movement of menstruating women around the house. Among urban families in India, these taboos, it seems, are disappearing, as we discovered from our conversation with Gomati Sitaraman and her daughter Vandana. They both live in Dubai, and we really wanted to bring them in to have an open and honest conversation about how attitudes have changed from one generation to the next.
Actually, there was no hiding where we were concerned, because through my childhood, it was very clear that when I had my periods, I had to sit separately. And, you know, if you've lived in Maharashtra and in Bombay Pune, you know, the rooms are very small. So we've stayed in a very small room. You know, we just had two rooms. One was the kitchen and the hall, come bedroom and everything. So I would sit in a corner and I would have chairs around me so that nobody could touch me. But I never thought about it so much as I was growing up, because me, my cousins, we've all gone through it. But the only thing is, I wanted to ensure I wouldn't do that to my children.
But it's interesting that you didn't find it odd growing up.
No, I didn't.
And yet, you were determined not to impose that on your
children. See, it wasn't a very nice thing, okay? See, I had fun 3 days because I didn't have to work, Okay, let's be very honest. I particularly didn't take it very seriously, I think. But then later on, when you got married, you know, you can't enter the kitchen. You know, it was the same in my in-laws' house. I couldn't enter the kitchen and I had to sit separately. Even when guests come, you know, I'm sitting separately. Then it starts feeling a little odd. But again, I'm not singled out. Even the daughters or the daughter-in-laws, they all do it. So, you know, when everybody does it, it doesn't seem very odd. But then we moved out to Dubai. And after a point of time, I think very few people actually, you know, do this of, you know, segregating or, you know, keeping people separate.
Did you ever ask your mum why it was enforced?
Actually, you know, my dad, he's an extremely deeply religious man. He does have answers to many things. He doesn't have answers to many things. And this is one of the few things, unfortunately, he doesn't have an answer to. But since I can see him believing it, there are certain things I don't touch. You know, it's like touching a live wire, you know, and, you know, having an unnecessary argument. You know, when things are all okay, there are certain things you just accept and move on. And this is one of the things in my case.
I don't have that problem. I've asked him plenty of times. We've got into an argument plenty of times. And it's not just with my grandfather, even with my father. He's also extremely religious, but he doesn't go into those beliefs, you know, where you sit in a separate corner in our house, practically because it's impossible. But I get into these arguments and, you know, they don't have an answer.
You know, but I was interested. Like, I used to speak to my grandmom about it. My grandmom actually was a lot more logical, I felt. She said, you know, in those days, it was basically more because women would hardly get any rest. So they were given 3 days of compulsory rest. And in what I've been given to understand is, until there was some religious, you know, understanding around it, people would not follow it. So to give it a kind of compulsion, so they would say it's a religious understanding that you have to be away for 3 days is what I think.
I'm assuming. The argument that is being made is that if it was truly in favor of women, women should have had a choice. Because we're not all built the same, even as women, right? I mean, some of us might have extraordinary amounts of energy and may not choose to rest. It's just, I think, the removal of that element of choice that is...
In those days, women hardly had a choice. You know, let's be very honest, they never had a choice
in anything, a lot of things. Right.
Okay, so I guess this was their way of saying you compulsorily get 3 days rest. Again, not a choice, but they never had a choice, so it never mattered. Now, yes, as you say, we do have a choice. I go running even when I have my periods. I swim, you know. None of my activities are stopped.
I actually believe that, you know, it started off as an aspect of rest and eventually religious connotations. And we live in a patriarchal society. There are certain things, you know, that are taken into account in those cases that has eventually convoluted the whole idea and has become what it is today. It comes to a point where you no longer realize why you do it, but you do it because it's been done through the years.
Specifically speaking, what is it that is not permitted when a woman is menstruating?
I can pray, but I can't go near the altar.
Okay.
I still don't, even though I'm here. For me, it's so ingrained in me that I genuinely cannot. Back home, I don't cook. But you're absolutely, I mean, I do everything else except going to the altar.
Right.
It's not forced on me. That's my choice that I don't go to the altar. Apart from that, and I pretty much do everything.
In a traditional, for example, in your parents' home, what would not be permitted? Is it just not going into the kitchen and not going?
No kitchen, no cooking.
Right.
You actually don't move out of that space because
You move. They tell you to get out of the house.
Yeah, no, that is different. You know, if there's something going on, they say, you know, okay, this time to this time, figure out your own way. But generally, like when I go, I remember the first day I was extremely happy, second day I was annoyed because, you know, you have this little space, you don't move out because, you know, you can't touch any of the other clothes because otherwise it'll have to be washed. You don't touch the food. I'm a person who likes to serve my own food, but you can't touch it. So having someone serve my food would really annoy me.
But also it must have been even more different because I've heard, and I don't know if these are true stories, where they weren't even allowed to occupy the same house as...
No, nothing like that.
Right, okay.
My mom would very much sleep there and eat there and my grandmom would cook for her. I did exactly what my mom did.
Right.
No, actually, my grandparents' house, when my friends, when they still come over, my grandparents are very clear. If any of you have your periods, sit there. And they actually do. I mean, my friends follow because, you know, they've known my grandparents for like 7 years now.
So, you know, it's... Sometimes I just don't like to... You know, my parents are 80 and, my mom is 74, my dad is 84. for the past few years, you know, when I talk to them and I've been having arguments with them, I realized, you know, at the age of 75, do I really want to sit and change them and, you know, break my head and upset them over something like this, which I've been doing for so many years I've been doing it without creating a fuss. Do I really want to create a fuss about this? No. So I don't bother.
And the fact is, you know, they're very accommodating, because when they come here, like I remember the first time I got my period and they were here in Dubai, I actually was in the hall that time. I said, after I finished my period, the first thing I told her, I'm never doing this here again. Today, you know,
they
come
accommodate
here.
Your non-segregation out
yeah.
here.
Yeah, here, they're pretty
they
okay.
Here, they don't.
But they're very clear. When you come to my house, you do what you want, which I think is a fair enough deal.
They just tell us, don't let us know when you have your period.
Yeah.
Here. Don't.
Ignorance is bliss.
So just don't let me know anything. If you remember in those days in schools, we would be shown a video clipping on about it, and we would be given a Carefree or a Whisper Free. And I remember
the sanitary napkins,
and I would be walking, and I was walking home and waving it from down, you know, saying, Mom, I got this free. And my mom's like, put it in your bag. So when I walked up, and then she realized, she said, you know, I said, they showed some video and it was very annoying, and you know, it was all jam and red and stuff like that. She said, it's not jam. She said, just wait for a couple of days, we'll talk about it. And then she told me, I was like, yuck. So she showed me, how am I supposed to use it? How am I supposed to dispose it? So it was pretty okay for me. So I ensured the same thing, you know. I wanted to tell them much earlier, but as usual, school intervened. And
no, school did intervene, but you know, he had the presentation in the auditorium, which was huge. You know, the teacher was talking, and you know, they showed a video, and it was, I mean, you know, we couldn't hear clearly because there's no mic. I think schools should make it more interesting, you know, where, or it should be at least class-wise, instead of, you know, having an entire bunch of, you know, 150, 200 students and explaining it to them. It's very difficult. Besides, you're more interested in talking to your friends and listening to the teacher. That's what you do all day in school.
I think they don't even not forget making it interesting. They don't tell them what they actually need to know.
What do they need to know?
I think they just need to know that they need not be worried. They need not be ashamed. That, you know, it's just a body function. Okay. You feel good, you know, the unnecessary blood is out of your body. So you don't soil your clothes, you use a pad. I mean, it's just that. You know, you dispose it properly and you take care of your health. Because you're losing blood, you may feel weak, you may feel tired, so you eat well. Some people don't feel tired, they're just perfectly fine, like I'm one of them, I don't. But some people do, you know. I think the main thing you need to tell them is, don't worry, it's okay, it's perfectly fine. You know, you are a woman, so this is a part of your growing up, like you'll have your breasts. You know, this is just another thing you need to have. Like if you ask my brothers, you know, they don't have a clue because, you know, they are completely left out of the picture. So I think the education should not be just for the women or for the girls. I think the men need to be aware, the boys need to be aware.
When we were in school, we were actually taught about the boys' puberty as well. I remember that being a slide. I mean, of course, we didn't know anything, but that was also a slide. But yeah, I mean, I agree, you know, boys need to be aware because it's very annoying when they crack those jokes.
What do you think needs to really change in terms of this conversation?
I think it's a well-known secret. I don't think that's right. Actually, it's just known, but nobody wants to talk about it.
You know, see, what will happen, I feel, is when the entire family gets involved, including the men and this, then it becomes an actual celebration rather than saying it's a woman thing and let only the woman do it, let only the woman handle it. Then, you know, that's when the segregation happens. And that's when I feel the men are left out and they're unaware. So when they're unaware, they don't care about it, you know, given the way they are. Like even like how we have for childbirth these days, we get the husband coming in and he actually sees his wife going through a lot of pain and he realizes it's not an easy process. So something like that, I think the taboo should be broken where, why not the father speak to the child about it? Why should it only be a mother? You know, it's a normal body process. Or the parents can sit together and talk to, you know, the parents, the child about it, and the child feels comfortable not just talking to the mother about it, even to the father about it.
I'll be very honest. I'm not keen on the celebration. But, I mean, not because, you know, it's, I'm not a very people person or whatever. It's because I honestly don't find the need to celebrate it. I mean, it's a body function. It's supposed to happen between this and this age. And it happens. You move on in life. Maybe, you know, just do something for her, get her something, you know, saying,
welcome to.
Yeah, you know, a gift always makes the other
person
happy.
Right? I mean, it's,
no,
it's
no.
kind of like
I'm very happy with only
yeah,
a gift.
Exactly. Like even that.
It could be any, it could take any form.
Yes.
But I think it should be done nicely is what I feel. And together, you know, not just the woman.
When we come back, we check back in on Menstrupedia and the impact it's having on period awareness in India and a little project in Australia.
Before we break, we have a small favor to ask. If you're enjoying the show, we would really appreciate it if you could please give us a rating and take a couple of minutes to post a review. It helps us a lot as more people discover the show, which ultimately drives our purpose to bring you more of these stories.
Hey, this is Chirag from Amaya Media, and we just wanted to take a few moments to say a heartfelt and a sincere thank you to all the men and women who are on the front lines today of ensuring the rest of us stay safe during the COVID-19 pandemic. All over the world, our lives have been turned upside down, but we're able to retain some semblance of sanity due to the men and women in healthcare, those working in local businesses and deliveries, and the men and women across all essential services, including civil defense, the police, education, the government, and our friends in the media. Once again, thank you for everything that you're doing from the team at Karama Sutra and Amaya Media. Welcome back. You're listening to Karama Sutra, Chronicles from Communities We've Grown Up With. I'm Chirag Desai.
And I'm Vinita Bharadwaj. In this episode, we're talking periods from a cultural standpoint. Before the break, we were in conversation with Gomati and Vandana Sitharaman, who live in Dubai, but are originally from India, where in many communities, it is not uncommon to isolate girls and women whilst they're menstruating. Needless to say, a lot of the stigma has to do with the ick factor around the topic, which continues, unfortunately, to fuel ignorance and in a way keeps the fear factor alive and well.
Indeed. And Menstrupedia has been doing some great work in helping facilitate healthier conversations between young girls and their parents. But one of the impacts they've started to have is also indirectly educating young men to have healthier attitudes about periods.
You mentioned earlier that their story began while they were in university.
Yes. So as part of their design project, they came up with a creative way to introduce girls, families and schools to menstruation without feeling embarrassed.
Our design brief was creating an educational tool to teach girls about menstruation. So that was the, and we tried out games, we tried out online games. It did not work because that won't be an inclusive medium. Comic book worked because then Tuhin was reading a lot about graphic novel and how the visual narrative has helped to tackle challenging issues that people don't want to talk about. It has kind of subtly changed the way people want to talk about it and then empower them.
So we made that, we tested it with a lot of, tested it with girls in different schools in Ahmedabad, in Mehsana, also in Ranchi where Aditi is from. So all those places we tested it and we found that kids as well as the parents were very comfortable in talking about. And most important thing is we saw that while there were 3-4 girls reading this thing, there were also 2-3 boys who were interested in finding out that what is it that they're reading. Yeah, it's a comic book, what is written there and all of that. So we realized that, okay, that's the power of it, that it removes the taboo-ness around this topic, that hesitation around this topic, to an extent that boys also feel like knowing about it.
So by 2011, they'd gotten married, grabbed their savings, and set up shop a year later in Ahmedabad, where Menstrupedia now lives. Now, this was around the time that the country was stunned by the horrific Delhi gang rape that had made international headlines.
Everybody was becoming more and more sensitive about women issues. Everybody was becoming more and more, proactive in saying that, hey, we have to treat our women in a different way. And menstruation being the very basic, because if you come to think about it, if a girl or a woman can't even talk about her natural biological process, how is she ever going to talk about any violence that she faces? So we are basically teaching our girls to see themselves as be ashamed of their bodies. And then it has a ripple effect of gender-based violence, you know, education is being affected. We did crowdfunding for this. We wanted to raise 4 lakhs to make the book that you see now. We ended up raising 5 lakhs. We had a Menstrupedia blog where people would write about menstruation. And it slowly started changing, seeing menstruation in a positive light. Then PNG's Whisper came on board and then they had a campaign of Touch the Pickles.
I'll touch the pickles. pickle.
Periods ke dino mein kehte hain don't wear whites, don't go out, don't play, don't touch the pickle. I say girls, let's break the taboo.
So
ahead.
Touch the pickle is basically it's a very popular myth where it is believed that if you touch a pickle during your periods, the pickle would go bad. yeah, quite bizarre. I think it was independently happening, but because of menstrupedia's present, we were able to show people that, hey, it could be talked in a positive way. And to break taboo, it's in favor of everyone. Somehow, menstrupedia was able to do is that tell everybody that, hey, it's cool to talk about menstruation. It's all right. We can talk about it.
We started receiving a lot of emails from people from different parts of India that they would want to translate it in their language and be able to use it in their communities. Because we knew that if it has to go to the rural region, to remotest places in India, it cannot be in English and Hindi. It has to be in all the regional languages.
I have to say, their story is fantastic, given how they're really trying to change mindsets and behaviors in a country that has such strong traditional values. But I'm curious, have they actually managed to win people over?
Actually, they've seen great adoption of the comic book into school curriculums. So today it's available in 16 languages in more than 6,000 schools across India.
Wow.
They also partner directly with at least 5 state governments. Plus, they're now shipping internationally. So they have local translations available in China, in Bangladesh, in Nepal, the Philippines, Hungary, and even Uruguay in South America.
And the way they use Instagram is also super creative in the way they sort of tackle all these mythbusters and engage with girls and women on introducing or managing periods.
They now also publish education videos on YouTube, which act as supporting material for the book. For example, the Hello Periods video, which is available in 12 languages and has crossed 1 million views.
I want to also share a very interesting story with you, which happened here in Ahmedabad with Eklavya School. So this is way back, five years back. They acquired some 100 books from us. Now they have developed, with the help of our book and Hello Periods, they have developed a program where they don't require anyone else to come and teach the girls. But those girls who got the menstrupedia comic book first time, 5 years back, were in class 7. Now all these girls are in class 12th. So their program is of one day where these 12th standard girls are teaching the 5th standard girls, 6th standard, 700 girls about periods. And I really think that when it comes to, if you want to make this knowledge mainstream, it always has to be peer-to-peer learning, like each one to teach one. And these kind of small, you know, menstrual champions are being, I don't know, they have mushroomed in each and every corner of our country.
They say that, you know, men are supposed to be in getting involved in it or not, but they cannot separate themselves from these connections that they have with the female members of the society, right? In fact, this is something that we realized when we were crowdfunding and then when we started selling the book. A huge proportion of our contributors who financially contributed to our campaign were men. And I'm not saying just married men. They were my batchmates from my college. They were men whom I've never met, who are still students, who are still studying in college. They saved some pocket money. They contributed it.
So we have made this movie, Padman, and, you know, there is a kind of menstrual revolution that is going in India.
The movie Padman, Aditi alludes to, is inspired by the real-life story of Arunachalam Muruganandam from Coimbatore in southern India. He is credited with inventing a low-cost sanitary pad-making machine. And he's also been raising awareness about traditional unhygienic practices around menstruation in rural India.
We are so thankful to him. The low-cost sanitary napkin-making pad process has been set. We need more innovators, more scientists. So can we work on increasing the quality of these pads, maintaining that the cost has. So there is a lot of innovation there.
Even today, attitudes towards menstruation can vary around the world. From the seemingly innocuous delivery of sanitary napkins wrapped in newspapers or black opaque bags, so the contents are hidden, to the disturbing extreme isolation that we spoke of at the start of the show, to the horrifying reality that a girl becomes a man's property when her first cycle begins.
Yeah, so even in countries such as Australia and New Zealand, I still find it surprising that there is an element of secrecy around periods.
That's Carol Morris from Sydney, Australia. She's a physiotherapist, mother to 2 young boys, and menstrual mentor at Lunette Menstrual Cups. She also co-founded the Sustainable Period Project, which provides schools with demo kits that teach girls how to manage their periods.
What we did is we started distributing these kits to all high schools. Now, we started that in 2016. And in term four, which is December last year, we finished sending them to all the Australian and New Zealand high schools. And the feedback that we've received has been absolutely fantastic. So many of the teachers have said it's giving some really good conversations in the staff rooms. Even some of the teachers have been educated about what products are out there. And also a lot of the students, when they open the Sustainable Period Project kits, they're really finding it quite fun and fascinating.
So I'm curious, I mean, we've been talking about a shift happening in certain urban parts of India, for example, where the attitudes towards managing periods is just about starting to change. Is the same thing happening in Australia?
Yes. So over the last 2 or 3 years, social media movements such as hashtag End Period Shame and hashtag We Bleed have opened up online conversations on this topic. Carol told me that she's witnessed firsthand how generational attitudes towards managing periods are also changing in Australia.
We just want people to accept it's a natural process and just get over it. And this sort of strong attitude has definitely seemed to help end the period shaming, I guess, in Australia and New Zealand to a certain extent. Saying that, you know, my mum, she pulled out some hideous belt with different bits of cloth material and showed my older sister. Luckily, I wasn't subjected to this display. But my sister told me she was shown this and it was all done in secret. And my sister was absolutely horrified by, you know, all these bits of rags and things that she was going to be told to use. And she actually thought that she wouldn't get her period because something so horrible wouldn't happen to her because she was, you know, a good student and a good, you know, she was well behaved. So, almost from the start, that sort of secrecy and period shame was put into us girls. I'm from a family of five, three girls and two boys. And certainly my brothers, they used to, if we were changing pads and things and they hear some rustling in the bathroom, they'd often say, oh, what are you doing? And we'd be really quite embarrassed about the whole thing. But I guess as we got older, our attitudes, and certainly because we are both in the medical field, I'm a physiotherapist and Elizabeth, my business partner, she's a nurse and midwife. We've really just thought, well, it's a natural process. It just needs to be treated like every other bodily function that's going on. But I guess also in our grandmothers' days, they definitely would have had to, I guess, try and hide a lot of their menstruation or maybe just keep low key, because the menstrual products, they really just didn't keep a woman secure. There'd often be leaks, or you'd have to make sure you're close by water or a basin just to make sure that, you don't get leaks or anything coming through your clothes. So definitely there has been a shift from my mum's to my generation. But we do have quite a way to go, I think, before it is just accepted as a perfectly normal everyday thing for a woman to go through.
Although she's observed that the hush-hush around menstruation has reduced, the next phase in their project is about getting women to consider a sustainable approach to managing their periods.
Some of the girls do find, I guess, cloth pads or washing things rather than throwing them in the bin, bit of a ick or disgusting factor still. So many of them would say that they'll still use disposables but change to the biodegradable ones, which break down quicker. But many girls are actually saying, look, I think we're going to either start mixing and matching, so using the reusables at home where they can wash it and feel comfortable. And then once they get used to that, they're going to start wearing them to school and in public, because it is really quite a mindset, getting your head around a whole different approach to menstruation. So really that's how we started the Sustainable Period Project.
So what the project has been doing is sending out resource kits to schools with products such as menstrual cups, all cotton pads, reusable cloth pads and period underpants that are compatible with different cultures, lifestyles and personal preferences. And while disposables still remain a popular choice among women, the project is starting to see more adoption of reusables as attitudes change.
The Sustainable Period Project estimates that every primary school in Australia and New Zealand could have one of these demo kits by the end of 2025.
I think the awareness is coming now that up to 90% of the conventional pads and tampons are made of plastic. So it's going to take, you know, 300 to 500 years to decompose. So we have quite a big war on waste movement going on at the moment in Australia and New Zealand. So a lot of women are switching to the cotton pads and tampons, which only take 6 to 12 months to break down. So I guess this is probably the first shift that we're seeing with the trends for menstrual products. Definitely, we are getting more and more using reusables. If they're a tampon user, they tend to switch to the menstrual cup. And if they've always been a pad user, they're tending to go towards the period underpants, such as the Modi Body period underpants. Cloth pads, not super popular. They are sometimes used as a backup with a menstrual cup. But yeah, definitely it's the menstrual cup and the period underpants that are, I guess, the main product choice here if someone's going to choose a sustainable or reusable option.
This episode of Karama Sutra was hosted by me, Vinita Bhardwaj, and produced by me and Chirag Desai, who also edits the show, with support from Abhishek Venkatasubramanian, Sukaina Kazmi, and Zainab Ujjaini. Special thanks to Aditi Gupta, Tuhin Paul, Gomati Sitaraman, Vandana Sitaraman, and Carol Morris. You can find all the links to their work and the original story about Kuvalapuram's guesthouse in our show notes. As always, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the episode. You can connect with us on Instagram at karama.sutra.
Karama Sutra is part of the Amaya Media Network. You can find all of our episodes for free in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Angami, and now Deezer as well.
We hope to be back for the 8th of May, but we may adapt our calendar depending on official directives in light of the precautions enforced due to the novel coronavirus. Until then, to all of you out there, we wish you good health. Stay safe.